Foundation at Kresge.org.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lurie. Coming up today, we're going to meet one of the longest-running activists in the field of monitoring hate groups. We'll talk with Leonard Zeskind in just a moment about hate groups in light of the massacre at the synagogue on Saturday. And then later on, we'll open up the phone lines and take your phone calls and get your comments about what you're about to hear. Well, Leonard Zeskind is now with the Institute for Research and Education on Human Rights, which is a nonprofit based in Seattle. But for a long time, he's been in the forefront of monitoring hate groups like the KKK and neo-Nazis. He's written a history of the far right in the U.S. called Blood and Politics. We'll talk about that a little bit in a moment. But I spoke with him yesterday about the ramifications of the slaughter of the 11 people at the synagogue in Pittsburgh over the weekend. And here's that interview with Leonard Zeskind. Leonard Zeskind, welcome to WMNF. Good to have you here.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here with you.
So how best should I describe you, what your work is today?
Well, I'm the author of a book called Blood and Politics, The History of the White Nationalist Movement from the Margins to the Mainstream. And that was published by Farrar, Straus, and Giroux in 2009. People usually mention the fact that I'm a MacArthur Fellow, one of those genius grants. It certainly is a nice accolade and so forth. And I'm also working with the Institute for Research and Education on Human Rights, which is www.irehr.org, and we're fighting this fight along with other people.
I first ran into you because you were with a group called the Center for Democratic Renewal, and you were paying attention in the 1980s to the rise of these far right groups.
I'm still doing it. I've been at it now almost 40 years, unfortunately. And I can tell you that they've been up and down. When President Obama was elected, a lot of people made a bunch of noise about a white supremacist upsurge. But actually, they didn't know what to do. Their politics were predicated on the fact that white people should be president and run the country and rule everybody else. And they, quite frankly, didn't know what to do. Now, that doesn't mean they went away, but the Tea Party eclipsed them to a certain degree in the first years of the Barack Obama administration. In the last couple of years, they figured out what to do, and they've been on a comeback since 2015. 2016, they've been in a real upsurge.
Was there an intersection between the Tea Party and these far-right groups? Did they have a lot in common?
Well, at the time that the Tea Party existed, and you can go to our website and find the data on the Tea Party. We published a number of reports on the Tea Party movement. The Tea Party did a couple of things. It became, by 2012, it was the primary anti-immigrant force in the country. And some of the border watchers, some of the vandals of the Minutemen and so forth that had gone down to the border, they were forming Tea Parties. And there were the anti-immigrant and the mainstream of the Tea Parties. And so, to a certain extent, the Tea Parties made mainstream some of the core principles of the white supremacist movement at the time. Secondly, and this is most important today, I think, the Tea Parties brought to millions the notion that white people were dispossessed in their own land and that they wanted, quote, their own country back. And this means that white people want to rule. And we shouldn't fool around with that. And it's back. and it's back in a very bad way.
To what extent has President Trump helped the rise of the far right today in the U.S.?
Well, a lot of Trump talk about Trump causing the far right, and that's a mistake. Trump is a result of white supremacists and far-right organizing that preceded him, like I just said, with the Tea Parties and the upsurge in 2016. And we have to remember, he did not receive a majority of the vote when he was selected by the delegates. Nevertheless, the white supremacists and the white nationalists and the far-right in the U.S., have grabbed on to President Trump. They like him. And he, to a certain extent, ratifies their ideas about immigration, certainly, and the rule of white people. He says all the white nationalists, you know, after Charlottesville, well, there's evil on both sides. Like, you know, people who fight white nationalism are equated to the people who promote white nationalism. So he's a boon to them. But they started before this, and you get a Democratic Congress, and in 2 years you get a Democratic president. If that happens, this phenomenon is going to continue. It's going to get worse, and it's going to get more violent, I think, as the Trump factions get beat back in the election sphere. So we should not think that Trump caused this. He's a result.
We're talking with Leonard Zeskind. He's the author of Blood and Politics, The History of the White Nationalist Movement from the Margins to the Mainstream. And this is WMNF in Tampa. You know, back when you and I first started talking in the 1980s, the discussion was that when the economy is bad, the U.S. begins to fray, groups turn on each other, and that's when you see the rise of these right-wing movements.
Well, that was certainly true in the Farm Belt when they were suffering a terrible depression. And it was true because the far right sent organizers and sham artists into the Farm Belt and took advantage of dispossessed farmers. But I'm not one that, in my book, you'll see the data. The vote for David Duke was a class vote, but it was based on racism, not unemployment. The vote for Proposition 187 in California, the anti-immigrant proposition, was a vote against immigrants. It wasn't a vote on the economy. So we have to be careful about the way we talk about this. The economy has an effect, obviously. Unemployment is a terrible disaster in its own right. People should have jobs, and they should have more power on their own jobs. But, you know, they should have the ability to control some more than they do. But it's not the cause of this phenomenon, but it does promote it.
Now, when the president proudly says, and he did it again last week, he said he's proudly a nationalist. What message does
Trump.
When Trump says he's proudly a nationalist, what message does that send to these right-wing groups?
Oh, they love it. They love it. They're nationalists, too. They're white nationalists. But in the lexicon, our lexicon, excuse me for a minute, our lexicon on this topic is all confused. And I help promote some of the confusion back in the 1980s when I used to talk about hate groups. What we have are white supremacists, people who want to promote and want to have the power of white people throughout the society and unquestioned and unshackled. There are white nationalists who want to break up the society and create a white ethno-state. There are nationalists like Trump who oppose the globalism of the globalist economy, even though he benefits from it, actually, as a hotelier and the real estate mogul. He dresses himself in the clothes of nationalism, and nationalism is a dangerous ideology, and it's driving the far right. Now we have it in Latin America, in Brazil. We have it in Eastern Europe, certainly, and that nationalism is in the United States, France, Britain, across the world. And it's in opposition to the unifying aspects of globalism. And you and I are no fan of globalism. We would prefer an internationalist society, a society where, to quote Rodney King all those years ago, he was right, people get along with each other. Can't we just get along? And we can't in a world that's riven like it is.
Yeah, it certainly, I think it's wrong that corporations have the ability to flow across borders without restrictions, but that people do not.
Capital flows internationally, and labor follows capital. Let's be honest about this. Those workers coming up here from Central America, and actually immigration has slowed from, you know, people talk about this big flow of immigrants. There has been a definite slowing of immigration. The number one immigrant group into the U.S. in the last year was from the Southeast Indian continent. They're going into the computer jobs. But people follow, the labor follows capital. If capital goes across the borders with the blink of a computer icon, as it does, faster than you and I can talk or think, then labor follows it.
Well, to what extent do you think that President Trump knows what he's doing? I mean, he's denied that he knew David Duke, for instance, but he does have friends like Steve Bannon and Ian Smith and others who've been either part of the Trump administration or part of the campaign who have this far-right ideology. To what extent do you think that President Trump knows what he's doing?
I don't know. I don't think any of us really know. And he certainly acts like he doesn't know what he's doing. You know, he stood up against hate after the murders in Pittsburgh. But he doesn't know what hate is. He doesn't know what white supremacy is. He doesn't know what racism is. But he's a bigot, and we know that.
Well, in the last 24 hours, Trump's favorite network, Fox, has been suggesting that this immigrant caravan that's headed north is going to be allowed to enter into the U.S. and bring with it all sorts of horrible diseases, including leprosy. And
what they bring is workers. Every roofer, I live in Kansas City. Almost every roofer in Kansas City is an immigrant. Now, it does make it more difficult for poor white people to compete in the labor market. And there's room for improvement on that issue. And the union should organize everybody. But what's coming north is a flow of workers. You cannot send American corn to Mexico and Central America and not put Mexican farmers and Central American farmers out of business. And that's what's happened. And they're coming north looking for work.
But to what extent, though, do the media like Fox News and Rush Limbaugh and Mark Levine and, you know, dozens of other conservative right-wing talk show hosts that are worried about immigrants and think that they're going to be able to go right past border security and get right in and then suddenly get free benefits, none of which is true, but to what extent does the right-wing media play a role in helping to gin up like the neo-Nazi movement or the KKK, the groups that might be violent towards people like the folks in the synagogue in Pittsburgh?
Well, that's a difficult question. A lot of people blame the media on the left and on the right. And what we have is a huge media market in the United States with media of all stripes. There's the Pacifica stations, radio stations, and there's the far-right radio stations. There's people who want to get along, and there's people who want to fight and kill. And I'm not sure. The media spreads this nonsense, but it doesn't start it. And we would spend better time organizing each other, educating ourselves, and going to the neighborhoods where the far right is strong, and educating folks, breaking it down. Tell them, if you went into a far right neighborhood and you said, "Well, your congressman wants to rewrite the 14th Amendment," he said, "Huh?" And you talk about the Constitution. The Constitution contains the 14th Amendment. It guarantees, or should guarantee, equality before the law and birthright citizenship. And they want to get rid of those things. And we should educate each other and spend less time moaning and groaning about the media. That's my opinion.
All right. I just think that if you travel up and down the country, there's more opportunities to hear far-right voices than there are opportunities to hear moderate, mainstream liberal, or left-wing voices.
True. Yeah. That is absolutely true. But we have an obligation, all of us who feel like you do and feel like I do, to go out and talk to people and organize. And it's not a media war. It's a war of ideas that we have to carry out.
Well, we're talking with Leonard Zeskin. He's the author of Blood and Politics, The History of the White Nationalist Movement from the Margins to the Mainstream. And you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. You mentioned a moment ago that right-wing groups go out and organize. How are they funded?
Well, the Tea Parties were not funded by the Koch brothers in Kansas. The Koch brothers are pro-immigrant. They're libertarians. And the left kept saying the Koch-funded Tea Parties. There was no Koch brother money in the Tea Party movement. We mistake big money for the far right. Now, it is true that they do have big money. But this year, Democrats are going to outraise the Republicans. They self-fund, these far-right groups. They self-fund. They raise money from their base, and their base is growing. And, yes, they attract millionaires, just like the left does. And they attract poor people who send a nickel and a dime, just like we do.
You know, there seem to be more confrontations between the left and the right, Portland being a really big example, where now almost every couple of weeks or every weekend, there's a confrontation between the far right, really fascist groups, and the left, which contains all sorts of people, everybody from Antifa to moderates, to liberals. And then the Proud Boys have been active across the country. They shut down a talk by Nancy Pelosi in Miami just 2 weeks ago. And they were beating people up in New York City 2 weeks ago, right after a speech at a Republican club in Manhattan. In San Francisco and Berkeley, there have been confrontations between the far right and more left-wing and mainstream groups. I mean, these confrontations now are going on all the time. What do you make of that?
Well, the Proud Boys and some of the organization known as the Rise Up, Rise Above movement, and some of the others are committed to street violence. And it's not going to be fun. And they've committed mayhem. They're white supremacist organizations. They're dedicated to fighting it out on the street. And so that Portland is an area of great confrontation, but as you said, it's happening all over the country. These are organizations formed specifically to fight on the streets. It's not a happenstance. Call me back in January, and the Institute for Research on Education, Institute for Research and Education on Human Rights, is going to be releasing a big report on the Proud Boys. And we're going to stun some people with their size, their demographic makeup, and some of the other things that we've been working to find out.
Okay, I'll do that.
Call me in January. I'll put you on our list, and I'll put you on our list, and we'll get this to you.
Well, one of the things about the Proud Boys is that they're now, at least in New York, and in the case of Miami, where Nancy Pelosi was shouted down and stopped, they're working with Republicans.
I think that's what's happening across the board with white nationalists. White nationalists and white supremacists are working with Republicans in a way that we haven't seen since David Duke ran for Congress and Senate as a Republican. They have dozens of candidates running for office this year, white supremacists. And they're running as Republicans. And the Republican Party sometimes welcomes them. Sometimes a local Republican leader will criticize them. But they're running as Republicans, and there's plenty of Republicans who like them. Stephen King, congressman from Iowa, the author every session of a piece of legislature to get rid of birthright citizenship. Claims to be a patriot, support the Constitution, yet he wants to destroy the 14th Amendment. Stephen King works with white supremacists. There are candidates for office here in Kansas and Missouri who are white supremacists.
I can remember a day, though, when Republicans would draw the line. You know, most famously, William F. Buckley, but others who were Republican would draw the line and say, you know, we're going to be conservative, we're going to be as far right as we can, but we're not going to interact with the Nazis or some of these hate groups out there. That line has been crossed, and
it absolutely has, and it's part of the reason we have this upsurge. But it's because the white supremacists have pushed across the border. And that's what's happening here. Pat Buchanan said about David Duke, his ideas are okay. He's running the singing the right song. We just need more David Dukes without the sheets. Mm. And that's what they got.
What do you think is the best strategy to reclaim a multicultural, tolerant, peaceful, democratic America?
It's a tough go. What we have to do is educate ourselves, understand the problem, not underestimate the problem, and build the fight against the far right into everything we do. Every aspect, whether it's whether you're an environmentalist and trying to save the oceans or the whales or whatever, you've got to build a fight against the far right into it. If you're a supporter of women's rights, abortion rights are in their sights, and we've got to include a fight against the far right as part of the fight against women's rights. For workers who are fighting for the labor unions have to fight against the far right. It has to be included in every aspect of everything we do.
Leonard, you've been doing this for a long time.
And I have. I'm tired.
And I remember in the 1980s when you were working against militias and working against the KKK and working against the revival of Nazism, neo-Nazis. Are there enough younger people? Are there enough younger organizations out there fighting the fight that you took up 40 years ago?
There's not enough, but there's some. And more have to come on board, and more have to educate themselves. Every decent-minded person should understand the threat. This is not a thing where we can sit back and let somebody else do our thinking for us. We have to step forward and understand this. We have to read about it. We have to pay attention to the current situation, and we have to get educated.
You don't think this is just a passing fad that President Trump, with his bullhorn, is able to gin up, but once he gets off the stage, you don't think these groups are going to disappear?
No, I don't think they're going to disappear. Actually, we're headed towards a mid-century showdown on these issues. In 2042, white people will no longer be a demographic majority in this country. They'll be a minority along with other people. We'll be a nation of minorities. And at that point, we're going to have to learn how to get along with everybody, or we're going to be at war. And I think there's going to be a very deep, dangerous struggle at that point. And over ideas, over who we are as America, and whether or not we can keep it all going. So I think I don't like to be an alarmist, but in the beginning of my book, I point to this fact. Demographically, we're headed into a war of ideas, and it's going to be fought.
You know, I know so many white people. I know African Americans. I know others, Asians and Latinos. I mean, this part of my circle, they're all willing to live next door to each other and get along and maybe intermarry. I mean, not everybody wants to draw that line to say whites here, blacks there.
No, thank God for that. We've got a chance. But if we think demographics is destiny, we have to remember South Africa, when a majority of black people were ruled over by a demographic minority of white people. And it's not foregone. It's not a foregone conclusion. We're all going to get along. There are some of us that want to, and certainly the intermarriage rates are going up, and that's very helpful for us as a society. But we've got a long way to go and a short time to get there.
Leonard, is there anything else that you'd like to add to this discussion about the rise of the far right in the U.S.?
No, I want to say thank you. This has been, one of the most informed conversations I've had with a media person in a long time. So thank you very much.
Well, Leonard Zeskin, author of Blood and Politics, The History of the White Nationalist Movement from the Margins to the Mainstream, thanks for coming on WMNF.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
That was Leonard Zeskind. I interviewed him earlier today. He's a longtime anti-racist activist. He's the recipient of a MacArthur Genius Grant. He was for a long time with the Center for Democratic Renewal. Now he's with the Institute for Research and Education on Human Rights. He's based, as you heard there, in Kansas City. The Institute's website is irehr.org. And if you want to comment about anything you've heard here for the last few minutes, you can call us up at 813-239-9663. And our email address is dj@wmnf.org. I'm Rob Lori. This is Radioactivity. It's about 11:34. I'm going to read a few news stories that we could also comment about. We can talk about what Leonard Zeskin told us, if you want. And also, these news stories, I think we should consider. The president and the first lady are on their way to honor the victims of the Saturday massacre in Pittsburgh. I think it's fair to say that some people in the Jewish community are going to welcome them with open arms. Others are quite skeptical of the motives and some of the public pronouncements of President Trump. The migrant caravan in Mexico is shrinking down. Now it's about 3,500 to 4,000 people. Last week it was about 7,000 people. The group is still about 1,000 miles away from the U.S. border. At their current pace, they'll reach the U.S. border in about 2 months. And President Trump is sending to the U.S.-Mexico border more than double the number of U.S. troops that are currently fighting the Islamic State group in Syria. The president is sending some 5,200 troops headed to the southwest border as a show of force against that migrant caravan that will be here in 2 months. U.S. government's International Broadcasting Agency says it will discipline employees who are responsible for a TV report about philanthropist George Soros that the U.S. government says violated its professional ethics and standards. The U.S. Agency for Global Media says those who produced the report would be placed on administrative leave pending an investigation into apparent misconduct and may face disciplinary measures. The report on George Soros aired in May on Spanish-language radio television Martí Network, which broadcast to Cuba. It describes Soros as a Jewish multimillionaire influencing nations through non-government groups. The report referenced information from the conservative organization Judicial Watch, which claimed that Soros was undermining democracies. Recently, Soros has been accused without evidence by right-wing commentators and politicians of funding the migrants headed to the U.S. through Mexico. And a group formed to protest the fatal shooting of an unarmed black teenager, Trayvon Martin, a few years ago by a neighborhood watch volunteer, is now being injected into the Florida governor's race. The group is called the Dream Defenders, and Republican former U.S. Congressman Ron DeSantis says the group is a radical group backed by Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum. Gillum says DeSantis is just trying to stoke anger and division. The recovery from Hurricane Michael in the Panhandle is not going so well. Two U.S. senators and three congressmen are asking federal officials to bring recreational vehicles and mobile homes to the Florida Panhandle to help residents who lost their homes to Hurricane Michael. They're asking that the alternative housing be deployed immediately to the Panhandle because there is suffering going on right now. With a week to go before the election day, more than 3 million voters here in Florida have already cast their ballots. The Republicans have an advantage. More Republicans have cast their votes so far than have Democrats. And President Trump wants to order the end of the constitutional right to citizenship for babies of non-citizens and unauthorized immigrants who are born in the U.S. Trump made the comments to Axios. Trump is seeking to energize his supporters and help Republicans keep control of Congress. Revoking birthright citizenship would spark a court fight over whether the president has the ultimate power to change an amendment to the U.S. Constitution. And our phone number is 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. Let's take some calls from some of our listeners. Let's go to Patty in Clearwater. Hey, Patty, you're on WMNF. What would you like to comment about?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking my call. Well, I listened to just the end of some of Leonard's comments, and they're really compelling. And, you know, it's very interesting to think about, you know, what is going to happen as whites, white European descendants, become the minority in this country. And I did weddings my entire career, and I started working with millennials a few years ago and was really disappointed in some of the work ethics, and started listening to some of the, you know, the standard, you know, comments about them. And I'm the mother of a millennial, and I started doing research because that's what I do. And it's an absolutely fascinating generation, and I think that we should really have some conversations about, or at least when we have conversations about the future and race and some of these groups that are out there, the radical groups, and maybe what this next generation, how they look at it, because there are these groups, but they're also, I just, in reading about them and how the polls, the marketers can't really market to them, they don't know how, because they do peer review, that's their number one way they buy, they don't buy like anyone else did, they don't socialize the way anyone else really has, and in some ways this is fantastic, and I really came away from my research a lot more positive about the future, and I just wanted to sort of bring that idea out there that you know, this is, the future is just really, they have a different viewpoint of race and sexual identity.
Well, what is their viewpoint on ethnicity and race?
Well, this is from my son's perspective, right, obviously, right. And his friend, which he's a very open-minded, liberal, you know, liberal kind of guy. But it's very open-minded. I mean, there's no lines in the sand. It's everybody is everybody. You are proved by your words. You're proven by your actions. You're proven by what you do, not the color of your skin or where you're from or anything like that. I mean, it truly is. He really is. It's a blank slate as far as I can see with him and his friends. Now, sort of the things that are important to them and the things they sort of delineate as you know, and the way they categorize is very different, too. Like, you know, he's explained to me all the different gender identities. There's a lot, things I'd never think of. And so I've asked him, well, isn't that sort of getting down and sort of being really, really fine-combing it, you know, to the point of almost killing it? And he's like, not really. So, yeah, I think that there's, and then there's ones that identify with, you know, he's told me about the incels. I'd have never really known what was up with them if he hadn't told me, you know. And so there are these, there's all groups. It's like they have a different world.
You said incel?
Yeah.
You said,
yeah, incel.
What's incel?
Oh my gosh, it's involuntarily celibate.
Celibate, yeah.
Young men.
Yeah.
And so you do have, like Leonard said, some of these groups are even more volatile, even more, because they have social media to reinforce their very, you know, linear views, and that's dangerous. But at the same time, to counter that, you have social media of everyone else. Do you know what I mean? So it's sort of this double-edged sword, and I'm just feeling more optimistic about it than I am pessimistic, because, you know, even, yeah, I just wanted to
get that
idea.
All right. Well, Patty, thanks a lot. Thanks for calling in.
Uh-huh.
All right, all right. You know, it's interesting. Patty mentioned about social media. Leonard Zeskin, my guest, was talking. He and I were talking about the media for a few seconds, and he was not that strong about the need for a more diverse media in the country. I mean, my take on media is that the right-wing media is much more demonstrative, much more giving much more of a call to action, much more angry. The so-called liberal media, or let's say mainstream media, I think is much more measured, much more nuanced. There's a whole lot less anger when you listen to, you know, whether it's CNN or when you read the Tampa Bay Times or the New York Times. There's a whole lot less anger being generated by the articles or by the news pieces or the interviews. I just want to play just three short clips. We're going to listen to President Trump and then Fox News hosts echoing what President Trump is saying. And now sometimes the Fox News hosts would say these things first and then President Trump would echo them. But there is a real echo chamber going on. Let's listen to a little bit of the Fox-Trump echo chamber.
You know what I am? I'm a nationalist, okay? I'm a nationalist.
A nationalist. In other words, a leader who puts his own country first.
You ever see when the fake news interviews them and then they try and cut it, but they'll go to a person holding a sign who gets paid by Soros or somebody, right?
Do you believe George Soros is behind all of this, paying these people to get you and your colleagues in elevators or wherever they can get in your face?
In that caravan, you have some very bad people. You have some very bad people.
A very serious, very dangerous situation is about to boil over at our southern border.
All right. Sean Hannity and several other Fox News hosts, they're kind of cheering on what President Trump is saying, kind of echoing what he's saying. But, you know, some of the more harsh things that President Trump is saying, what do you think? Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Elio writes, I have to wonder how soldiers and their families feel about their service now that it's been tainted by this poor excuse of a president. Elio goes on to write, they're being used as pawns for political purposes. I can't believe that's why they signed up. That's Elio. Mike writes this, The folks in Pittsburgh asked Trump not to come, which is why he's going there, writes Mike. Let's take some more phone calls. You're listening to Radioactivity on WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. And we're going to go to Kevin in Bradenton. Hi, Kevin. You're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob. I just wanted to comment on the guest that you had. One of the things that he mentioned was about how in 20 years there's going to be, you know, a reckoning. I want to say that I started to watch this movie called 22 July, directed by Danny Boyle, and unfortunately, I couldn't keep watching it. And
what's the movie about?
It's about terrorism, the worst terroristic act that has ever happened on Norwegian soil about 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, where the kids on the island were killed by a neo-Nazi. Yes.
Yes. And he does such a good job on how, you know, realistic the movie was that I got to a point where I couldn't watch it. You know what I mean? I just knew it was going to happen. But my point was that I heard him talk about the movie, and people were saying, well, don't you think it's a bad idea to bring this forward and people let people see, you know, what how horrific this guy's mind was and what he was planning and what he did. And he goes, no, this is the battle of our time, and right now is the best time for us to face it. So my thing is that I was listening to what he said, and I agree, but I also think that it's going on in a way right now where the line is being drawn. I love what the previous caller said about being optimistic because of the millennials, and I believe in that. But the people that are in power now are pretty far from the millennials. And in the next 10 or 15 years, I personally think that Danny Boyle hit it on the head because of what's going on over in Europe and around the world. I think that this is this battle of ideas, whether or not you're going to be accepting or whether or not you're going to, you know, pull in and say, no, it's got to be just us in power, the white people.
Yeah. All right, Kevin, thanks a lot.
I hope you get a chance to see that movie, Rob. It's really heavy.
All right. Thanks, Kevin. Thanks for the suggestion. I love movies. 813-239-9663. You know, I think for things to change dramatically, you almost need, and I hesitate to bring this up, but I will, you almost need a Reichstag fire. You need something that you can pin on the other group. President Trump needs it. You know, let's hope nobody on the moderate side or the liberal side or the left side does it. Anyway, I've said it. I'll stop saying it. 813-239-9663 is our phone number here at WMNF in Tampa. Let's go to Jack in Dover. Hi, Jack. You're on WMNF. Thanks for calling.
Hi.
Hi.
Good morning, sir. Thank you for taking my call. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, doing good. You know, despite all the chaos, I'm trying to keep, you know, positive outlook on life.
And you? Jack, did you want to make a point?
I did. My great-great-grandmother, well, great-grandmother, too, was American Indian. And I think that a lot of times people forget the fact that there were Navajo, Mohican, Blackfoot, Chippewa, Cherokee, just, I think, like 18 different tribes altogether. And at one point in American history, they were all tribes. They were all pushed together into one group to try to be stereotyped and thus, you know, became known as Indians. A lot of times people forget the fact that they were separate tribes. And so I think a lot of this white nationalist, this effort to try to stereotype people into different races is just exactly that. It's an attempt to try to stereotype people. And America is not, I don't think Americans will tolerate being stereotyped into different categories. We are made up. We're very diverse. We're made up of a lot of different races, and I think that's what makes us strong. I'd also like to give a shout-out to Sergeant Littlecorn. I know that, you know, he served his country in Afghanistan multiple times, and, you know, I know this morning he was standing out next to his helicopter in Little Rock, Arkansas. And so I just want to say God bless him and his family.
All right, Jack. Thanks a lot, Jack. Are you a millennial by any chance?
Yeah, I think I am. I mean, I'm almost 60 years old. I think I'm at the tail end of the baby boomers, and so you know, I've seen a lot of hate in my lifetime. And me, I kind of went in the opposite direction. I had a fortunate opportunity to meet some guys that worked for Saturday Night Live: Richard Johnson, Will Ferrell, a lot of the big hitters, and occasionally they would take a play off of some of the things that I said. And so whenever somebody would say something hateful, you know, I'm considered to be white. I mean, everybody looks at me, I look white. My friends joke with me about being white. I'm got red hair and freckles. So a lot of times I play to the fact that, you know, I'm white Irish. So, when I see white supremacists that are primarily poor people, you know, that have been like me, you know, you've lived in trailer parks or RV parks most of their lives. Mm-hmm. They bounce around wherever there's a job available. So my Saturday Night Live joke would probably be something along the lines that, you know, as an Irish person, there were never any jobs, so we always could rely on prostitution. And, you know, doing that, we would always try to leave people with more than what they paid for. Oftentimes it might be herpes or crabs, but, you know, it's better than nothing, right?
Hmm. All right, Jack. Thanks a lot. Thanks for the call. Not quite a millennial if you're 60. Let's go to David in Clearwater. David, thanks for joining the conversation. What's on your mind?
Well, I was listening to a statistic that someone was announcing on the program regarding the caravan of ISIS and all those other bad people that are Arabs and jihadists and people who are out to down America.
No. Which caravan was that?
It's a caravan of people that are coming up to America from Guatemala if they can get across the Mexican border.
You mean the people that are coming from Honduras and El Salvador?
Coming into America because they fear for their lives. They are, there's a particular name for that, and I really can't call it right now.
Well, they're refugees, but there's no evidence that there are people from the Middle East in that group.
These are people from Central America
and primarily Honduras and El Salvador.
I know that. I'm being facetious.
Okay, I missed that. I mean, it went right over my head.
May I finish? It's very short. It reminds me of a joke I heard when I was a kid about this guy walking around down the street, clapping his hands and throwing dirt over his shoulder, and somebody came up to him and said, "Excuse me, sir, why are you doing that?" And he said, "I'm keeping the tigers away." And they said, "There aren't any tigers within 3,000 miles." And he said, "See, it worked."
Yeah, yeah.
But the president's doing it. And we're listening to it. Somebody's listening to it.
Well, somebody is.
Yeah. Trucks can go down there listening to it. I was in the Guard for 6 years, and we went to the Republican and Democratic conventions in Miami, and it was much ado about nothing. Nothing happened.
That was 1972, right?
It was in 70. Yeah, probably.
Yeah,
72,
yeah. All right.
We stayed at Carl Gables High School, but nonetheless, the thing is, we're making all this. This news is going on, and everything is happening, and the president is going to all of these campaign rallies where he can raise money for his next election campaign, and he's ordering out troops, spending, increasing the deficit for nothing. They're not even going to be there for 2 months if they make it. 2 months, it'll be next year before they get here.
Yeah, it's going to be. All right, David, thanks a lot. Thanks for the call.
Good talking to you.
All right, good to talk to you. I'm sorry I didn't get the joke at the beginning. I thought you were serious. Adam writes this: imagine if Obama had come out and said, "I'm going to get rid of part of the Constitution because I don't like it." Well, Fox News would have had a stroke and would be playing a nonstop that statement on a loop right now. If Trump thinks he can get rid of the 14th Amendment by executive order, what's to stop a president from trying to get rid of the First or the Second Amendment, writes Adam. Adam, thanks a lot for your thoughts. David just mentioned President Trump coming here. He's going to campaign in Estero, which is right outside of Fort Myers, tomorrow. Bernie Sanders is going to be at the USF Tampa campus tomorrow afternoon. Governor Rick Scott is campaigning here at the Columbia Restaurant on Thursday afternoon. So this will be the crossroads of lots of political campaigns, the Tampa Bay area and the Southwest Florida area for the next few days. Let's take some more phone calls. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. And let's go to Terry in Bradenton. Hi, Terry. You're on WMNF. Hi.
Hello, how
Terry.
Are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, I'm frustrated.
Okay, why?
I want to make some statements. You said at the top of your show that the Republicans are ahead in the mail-in ballot race right now.
Well, it's the overall race, yes.
Okay.
There's about 3 million votes cast, and the Republicans right now have about a 60,000 vote advantage over the Democrats.
Yeah. I was listening to Andrew Gillum in Clearwater a couple of days ago, and I may get the number right, but I think he said there were still 800,000 mail-in ballots laying on people's coffee tables or kitchen tables.
That sounds about right. That sounds about right.
Okay. So the statement I'd like to make for all of us, you know, we got what, 8 days, 9 days to the election?
No, it's next Tuesday. It's 7 days from today.
7 days from today.
Yeah.
I think we've taken our eye off the ball. We can't do anything about Trump until 2020. But if we're behind, it blows my mind, to be honest with you, with what's happened in our environment and our beaches on both coasts and Laco and the Caloosahatchee, the St. Lucie River, that these people keep voting for the same party that's been in charge for 20 years, literally, as they suffer financial impact. Some of these people have to own some of those waterfront properties and restaurants and businesses, and it blows my mind. I'd like to challenge your station, honestly, to tell Democrats to get off their butts this next 7 days. We need to make a change, and I'll tell you, I can, part of my frustration, I've worked with the Manatee County Democratic office, and I was just trying to get some signs for Andrew Gillum, because I'm looking around this town, Bradenton. There are conservative signs on all the main streets, not very many signs for Democrats. And guess what? I made three trips there. I was able to get a total of 6 Gillum signs and 1 Scott sign.
Scott sign. You got a Scott sign at the Democratic Party?
I'm not a Scott sign, a Nelson sign.
Yeah, you know, Terry, we're nonpartisan here, so we're neither Democrat, Republican, Independent, Green, Socialist, but we do run announcements every couple of hours urging people to vote, and our board has taken the stand that they want everybody to vote, and so we are trying to get that word out, and that's what we can do as a non-commercial radio station, a community radio station. We urge everybody to vote. That's our official stance.
Well, I appreciate that, and I also appreciate you announcing where the campaign appearances are taking place, particularly Gillum. I've listened to him several times. This is a very, very intelligent person, and I just like to call out to people, think about voting for yourself for a change.
All right, Terry. Thank you so much. Thanks for the call.
You're welcome.
All right. And maybe the folks at the Democratic headquarters there in Bradenton will hear you, and maybe they'll get some more signs for you. We're going to go to Carlos in Tampa. Hey, Carlos, you're on WMNF. What would you like to say?
Yeah, thanks a lot, Rob. I'm going to make quick 2 comments. Regarding the caravan, it is just a result, Rob. I don't know why people are surprised. We ripped off these countries for last 2 generations, and now we have, to pick up what we did to those countries. You know, we ripped them off, we create civil war, we put puppet there. What do you expect? This is not only the U.S. This thing is going on in Europe for many years because the European, especially the French, they went to Africa and they ripped them off. And now you see tens of thousands going to Europe every year, and thousands of them are dying. So this is a global issue, Rob. This is not just few hundred.
Yeah, I think our guest made that point pretty well. Leonard Zeskin said, look, we're selling cheap corn to places like Honduras and Mexico. You can't expect that cheap corn not to put a farmer out of business in Honduras and Mexico. And that's true. Yeah. You know, the other thing, too, Carlos, is that over the last 30 years or so, we have spent lots of our precious tax dollars on military aid to places like El Salvador and to the Contra in Nicaragua and to Honduras. I was in Honduras and I saw U.S. military transport jets on the commercial airfield. So we have sent a lot of our treasure down there to support the military side of those governments. And maybe we ought to think about supporting the more peaceful side of those governments.
Absolutely. And now we are surprised. Oh, my God. Second point, Rob, very, very quick. One of your shows, when Trump was in Tampa, you mentioned it was a lady, older lady, didn't even have money to put,
yeah, I interviewed a Trump supporter. Trump supporter had no money for gas, but she had gone to the Trump support event because she believed in the president so much.
Absolutely. Now, middle-aged guy live in his van. Now, the guy who killed these two African-American husband and wife, now these middlemen, I mean, all these people economically are doing so bad.
Yeah, all right, Carlos, terrible. Thanks a lot. Yeah, that pipe bomber certainly wasn't doing very well under the Trump economy. Carlos, thanks a lot for the call. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115, and I will play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned for your hero, Mark Biro. He's coming up next. Jan Simpson's been our phone producer today. This